If you're a stay-at-home mother and are transferring from that to homeschooling, I think the systems that we have in place for being a stay-at-home mom generally transfer pretty easily. But if you are used to getting up and getting your children ready for school and then transition from pulling your kids out of school to homeschooling, the culture shock of being home all day can be real. And today I'm going to talk about systems in place to help your homeschooling day and hopefully your life in general go a little more smoothly. So let's get started. I want to start this podcast by coming in with the utmost humility. I'm going to share our systems, but they are not going to be the best systems for everyone, and some of them in our current state aren't even the best systems for my family right now, and we're struggling to refine those. So know that even though I'm sharing, hopefully bringing some of this topic to light, that I'm definitely coming at it with humility. My systems are not the best, and they might not even work for you at all. So, take what you have. Hopefully, you share your systems in the community and leave the rest. I want to spend a few minutes talking about why systems are important. And what I mean by system is habits or a way we do things. I envision Charlotte Mason calling this habit forming, but it's how we share the work of making a household run and how we go about doing that. And these are important because they enable us to continue with some level of consistency. Not just in our day-to-day, but particularly when there's a chronic illness or an emergency or other things that these systems that we have in place help even those times go a little bit more smoothly. And I hope to give examples of that as we go through. The biggest system that I can think of, other than food, which if you are coming from public school to staying all day at home, it's going to be a real shock about food, which we will talk about in a little bit, is house cleaning. And even house cleaning may be a big shock to you if you are used to going out and being at work and being at school and the house is not used, like people aren't in the house all day long, and then coming home and homeschooling to find your family is using the house all day long, you may find utter chaos, which is one of the reasons that we're going to talk about house cleaning and one of the reasons that we're talking about systems. Because for a lot of us, if there is no food routine or no food in the house or the house is utter chaos, it is challenging to get homeschooling done. So these systems help us maintain that consistency from day to day. And house cleaning is definitely a big one. Now, my family's attitude about house cleaning is that we all work, we all live in it, and so we all contribute to keeping it clean. It is a obligation, a part of being part of the family, a responsibility to the family, and we also have that same kind of service attitude towards our community. It's part of being in a community. You give to the community in what way you can. You have a responsibility to the family, you have a responsibility to the community. Other families that I know have used house cleaning or chores as an opportunity to teach financial responsibility with an allowance. And I don't have an opinion on that. It's just we didn't happen to do that. We approach finances differently. I don't think there's a right or wrong here. Like I said, it's different for each family, and each family should choose what works for them. But allowances have not been tied to the responsibilities that my children have, and my husband and myself, ironically, do not get paid for doing the housework in our house either. So our routine has changed over the years. When the children were little, toddler age, and even in elementary school, they were paired off with a parent in their work. So we would split up the different chores in the house. Our house is oddly split up. We don't split it up by rooms. We have one person doing our wood floors and floors in general. Those people sometimes do the bathroom floors, the pantry, and the kitchen. And then someone cleaning the bathrooms, the sinks, the toilet, the tub. And then someone doing the vacuuming in the house. And then we have a few odds and ends that get done with sweeping the back porches off. Sometimes there's dusting. And sometimes there's additional kitchen work or cleaning the windows that get done. So we would divide those things up between my husband and I when the children were little, and each person would take a child and basically teach how we do each of those activities, like how we would go about moving everything off the floor so that the sweeper could be placed on the wood floors, and then go through and teach how to clean the bathrooms, right? Spray. We use very simple cleaners, mostly because of my alpha gal and the allergy to mammal products. Oddly enough, there's a lot of mammal products and cleaning products, and so we stick to mostly dish detergent that's safe and baking soda and water. And so we go through the process of spraying down the countertops in the bathroom and the toilets and letting that sit for a little while so it can kill all the germs, and then scrubbing out the sinks and the bathtubs and then cleaning the toilet. As the children have grown and become more independent, they have worked into not needing to pair off with a parent. And if you do it this way, I just want to tell you, this is where things get fruitful, because first, they learned younger how to get everything clean. And we can talk about standards if you want to talk about standards, because very rarely does anybody in my house clean to my standards. But what we do is that every once in a while, we will trade off jobs, and then I will clean whatever it is to my standard. So on a regular basis, most things don't get clean to my standard, but probably once a month, once every 3 months, they get clean to my standard. Going back to the children's work when they're young, this really pays off when they're older. Now, instead of the house being divided between my husband and I and being paired with the child, which can take some time, we now all four have separate jobs once a week, and those things get done independently. And so it's cut our workload for the house in half, fourth, for each of us. And that is something else that we do that can be done differently. We as a family clean the house usually at the same time once a week. It has shifted a little bit. My son works on one weekday, and so sometimes, and that's usually the weekday that we would do the house cleaning. So sometimes he does his work separate than the rest of us, but a lot of times we are doing it as a family all together at the same time. And when we do that, it roughly takes us, if we're doing, you know, our usual light cleaning, about 30 minutes to finish the entire house with us all working. And we have a relatively large house. It's larger than what I would have purchased if it weren't on this property. It's around 2,400 square feet. Now, on days that we add in a little deeper cleaning, which happens on a semi-regular basis, where we're like dusting the ceiling fans or doing a little extra scrubbing in the kitchen corners, then our time may increase from 30 minutes to an hour. There are different systems where people are doing one or two items a day, and it really works really well for those people, right? They're doing bathrooms on Monday, vacuuming on Tuesday, or however that works for them. But for me, personally, I need to have the entire house clean all at the same time. And I can endure the disorganization that happens at the end of the week on Thursday and Friday, knowing that the house is going to be completely clean the next day. So you may have noticed that I didn't talk too much about the kitchen in this, and that is because I feel like the kitchen is a large piece of housekeeping that needs to be maintained regularly, not just every day through the week, but various times through the day. And the attitude in our family is that it is everyone's responsibility to feed and to clean the kitchen. And this also has been very different when the children were little to what we are currently doing. So when they were young, they would be responsible for age-appropriate activities, right? And this usually included putting away the silverware. And then they would grow into putting away the dishes, the dried dishes from the night before. And eventually they grew into doing the dishes. And when both of them were at the age that they could both do dishes, they would alternate days on who did what dishes. I usually was the person, not currently, that made dinner. And I'm going to talk about how long COVID for me, that chronic illness, shifted how we do things so that we can maintain order and not have too much on any one person. So before the pandemic, we did all of our dishes by hand, and the kids usually took turns in doing dishes once a day, with my husband doing the dishes in the evening and the kids alternating days doing the dishes during the day, and myself making the evening meals. We had all the feeding and all the cleaning for the kitchen taken care of as a group. But when my long COVID came, those systems didn't work anymore. One of the things that came with long COVID was my POTS. And if you're not familiar with POTS, it's a type of dysautonomia. So my blood pressure was not maintained and standing was very difficult for me. So it was very difficult for me to stand in the evenings when my symptoms were the worst for 30 minutes to an hour to cook dinner. That was no longer possible for me. So my husband took over dinner, and you can see now it has shifted. So my husband is cleaning the kitchen in the evening. He's also cooking dinner for everyone. And even though the kids are still participating, it's just too much for one person. And so we shifted our systems. One of the ways that we did that was that we started using our dishwasher on a regular basis. And so now the children alternate who's responsible for putting the dishes away each morning. Everyone is responsible for making sure that the dishes get loaded into the dishwasher throughout the day. And then my husband is making dinner right now, and then I am helping when I can to clean the kitchen, but mostly he is also finishing the last touches for cleaning the kitchen. And we're trying to get the children more involved in that because I do want them to be responsible for or to help in their responsibility to make sure that the kitchen is cleaned at the end of the day. So we're still working on that currently because with my long to COVID, my portion has been taken out of the mix, and I do help fill in where I can with the kitchen. It's just the cooking dinner, I'm not able to do at the end of the day. Sometimes I can do meal prep in the middle of the day, but also my energy level is finite. Everybody's energy level is, but it's much less for me than what it was before. So I have to be more choosy where I place that energy. And the good thing is that my endurance is increasing. I'm getting better. And so I'm able to participate a little bit more. But it's still limited compared to what I was before the long COVID. So that is a little way that our systems have shifted, and how that shift, when you have a system in place, can support chronic illness or an emergency event because you have others participating in that system and can pick up those pieces. Another thing that changed in another system that we think about is laundry. And we used to do laundry mostly when needed, so it wasn't every week. When the children were smaller, they would help sort the laundry, and then I would go and show them how to place the clothes in the washer, how to turn on the washer, how much dish soap, or not dish soap, but laundry soap that you would use, and how to wash, and then how to dry the clothes. And then sometimes they would help me fold the clothes. They are now teenagers, and though still I am often prone to do laundry as a family because I feel like environmentally it's more efficient. We're using less water and less heat when we do it together than for everybody to do their separate loads, but sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And each of the children, when they need to, can do loads of laundry on their own. When I do the laundry, I ask everybody in the house if they have any laundry that they want to do. My husband doesn't always do that. And so, it's kind of haphazard at this point, but it's because they're older and they're more independent and they can do their laundry on their own. But when they were little, we definitely would pair up again with the child and teach them how that they could do it to foster that later independence. Now they're able to wash their clothes on their own if they need to. They know how to use the washer, they know how to use the dryer. So those are our systems for housekeeping, kitchen, and laundry that we do as a family. It definitely has changed as they have grown up, and the attention that we spent with teaching them when they were little has obviously paid off for us as they've grown. I do want to reiterate, though, that there's many different systems out there, and this way that we are choosing to do it is not necessarily the best way for other families, because they have different dynamics in their families than what we do. Maybe more children, maybe varied ages. There are just all kinds of different dynamics in families. And so, this way is not necessarily the best way. And honestly, some of them, like I stated before, aren't even the best way for us personally. Like, they're not working to their full efficiency that I know that they can, particularly with the kitchen right now. Shifting gears a little bit, let's talk about food. Food is probably the most surprising part of deciding to homeschool. I think it might be the more challenging than choosing curricula. I mean, it is a shock to people that are used to leaving the house for the daily work to see how much food and time food preparation takes for homeschooling. It's just a lot. So some of the things that I do for grocery shopping, lots of people do meal planning. And at one time I did do meal planning and that was helpful, but I'm not making the meals right now. And so I'm just trying to support my husband in whatever way I can to get the meals on the table. It is different. He is not the cook in the house. And so I think our nutritional health is, you know, slightly lower than it was before, and maybe a few other things, but I'm very grateful that he's picked it up through this chronic illness for me, because we really needed it. So here are some of the things that I do that help keep food in the house on a regular basis, and I don't do this by myself. The first thing is that we often are purchasing in bulk, which limits the amount of time that I have to spend ordering groceries. Because with long COVID, we also are still doing curbside pickup. We are not going inside stores most of the time to pick things up. So buying things in bulk, especially things like our grains, our beans, our nuts, seeds, and dried fruit, has been really helpful in maintaining food in the house, where I'm not constantly having to spend time either shopping online or Chad going into a store. The other way that bulk really serves my family in general is that we live in Florida, which is prone to hurricanes during the summer and early fall months. And having that bulk food, that stash of food in the house, ensures that we have enough food to last us. I also buy meats for our house, safe meats in bulk from a distributor, because sometimes it can be difficult for me to purchase meats that don't have cross-contamination. And if I'm buying in bulk, then I know that these meats are safe and my family doesn't have to do without meats that might be questionable because of cross-contamination. For foods that don't fit within the bulk category but are still non-perishable, I have a monthly auto ship set up through Thrive, and it makes it really easy just to go through the list and see what we need and what we don't need and eliminate those things and just have a month's supply of non-perishables sent to us. That also eliminates what I'm purchasing, the amount I'm purchasing on a weekly basis from the grocery store, and the amount of shopping that it takes for me to do those things, which is really nice. The only things left after that are usually our produce and a few other refrigerated items that I am not able to purchase in bulk or are non-perishable. And groceries are another whole family kind of activity for us. My husband is keeping track of bulks the majority of the time. I keep track of the non-perishables that we get from Thrive the vast majority of the time, and we work together with the kids a little bit with groceries, like the produce and stuff that we order on a weekly basis. We try to involve the kids, like, what kind of fruit do you want to have? And, you know, snacks too, because the thing about homeschooling is that you eat a lot of snacks. Kids eat all day long, in America anyway. And I don't think this is true for everyone, and I don't think this has to be the family culture, but it is my children graze most of the day until the evening meal. But when we do go to get groceries, everyone is responsible for helping bring them into the house, and everyone is responsible for helping put them away or wash produce. Whatever needs to be done, everybody is responsible until all of the groceries are placed in their appropriate place. Another aspect of food that I think is helpful is how you do the noonday meal, lunch, and snacks, because those are inevitable. And a lot of the times we try to have easy, cheap snacks available for school. I mean, you don't have to include snacks in your homeschooling, but I also find that that's another connection mode, especially for my daughter. Food is a huge connection for her. So we often do popcorn or treats for poetry tea time or other things, and I just have those kind of things planned or thought out in my head. My children were allergic to corn some time ago, but just recently in the last few years they've outgrown that. So popcorn is really popular, and we're making up for lost time on that one. We bring popcorn and tea to homeschooling, the afternoon session for homeschooling, on a regular basis. And I just think it is helpful to have in your mind, think ahead what how you want to do lunch and how you want to do snacks, because that makes homeschooling a little easier if the food is easy and ready to access. Now, I know some families will cut up vegetables and have, like, is it called charcuterie boards available for the kids? That's an easy way to have snacks or lunch. Some of what I like to do is when we do soups or stews, I will freeze in wide mouth 1 cup mason jars a serving of soup that can easily be taken out, thawed, and served with a sandwich for their lunch. Now, my children are teens, so we do lunch much differently than we did when they were little. When they were little, we all ate together, and I made a lunch for all of us. I wasn't necessarily cooking lunch every day. Maybe there was leftovers. When we did soups and stews, like I talked about earlier, I would often double up the recipe so that we could have extras in the freezer or in the fridge that I could just pull out and serve for lunch. But I was trying to have in my head at least a mental idea of how we were going to do lunch. Now that they're teens and they're older, they don't always eat when I eat, and they're able to make their own lunches. Though my daughter, who's 12, I still like to offer choices to because I feel like I can get more nutrients in her if I suggest some good foods that we have available for her to have for lunch. After lunch, we would spend a few minutes cleaning the kitchen. Prior, when the children were old enough, they would switch off doing the lunch dishes for each day. So Jonah might do the dishes on Monday, and Addie might do them on Tuesday, and go back and forth like that. For a while, Jonah was doubling up on one day because he was older, it was easier for him, and he was willing to do that to maintain the consistency of the days that was important to him. Now that has shifted, and there is one day that I put the dishes away. And it's also shifted so that we're not doing dishes after lunch. We're just making sure that our dishes make it into the dishwasher. But when they were younger, we would spend a few minutes doing that before we'd head back to doing our homeschooling. So that's a little bit about how we do groceries, how we do food. I do think systems around keeping food in the house, like grocery shopping, that takes mental energy and mental load, and it's helpful to have more than one person help you with that if that works in your family, if you have a partner to work with, definitely helps to begin to involve the kids, because then they will be able to do more when they're older. And it helps to have a system for lunch and snacks that are available. And I know different people do it differently. Hannah with Pepper and Pine does a large midday meal for everybody, and then they do a smaller leftovers kind of on your own evening meal. So it's different for everybody, but food is a big part of homeschooling, and it's helpful to have some kind of system in place to deal with that. Now I want to move into systems that are more directly related to homeschooling. I had some help brainstorming this, and I'm really glad I did, from my friend Jess, who offered several things that I had forgotten about. One of them is one of the biggest advice that I have for new homeschoolers, and that is having a plan B for bad days. Having a system, or at least preparation, for a bad day in homeschooling or a day where things don't go as expected is super helpful. And this can be anything. Sometimes with some connection, a pause and connection, you can turn the day around. Like, maybe baking cookies, or I recently had an experience with my daughter where picking flowers and making a couple of bouquets to bring into our homeschooling day really shifted her attitude, and that connection changed the day, the tone of the day for us. But that doesn't always happen, and you can still make that shift and not be able to finish the day. So it's helpful to have systems in place for those kind of things. And this also includes sick days. I mean, if the children are sick, most likely the school is not going to happen. But if parents are sick, it doesn't mean that the education has to cease. There can be more independent work or a documentary. Either way, I think it's just helpful to have a plan B if you have appointments, or mom is sick, or you end up having a bad homeschool day. And it's going to happen. I think that this is profound for a new homeschooler. When I was first homeschooling, I don't know why, but I was always highly discouraged when we had a bad day. I've now come to realize that even in public school systems, everybody has a bad day occasionally, and not every day is ripe with productivity and learning. Even in public school, they're having bad days, and the teachers plan for that. And I've come to learn to plan for that as a homeschooler, to have documentaries for backup, to have snacks in hand, or be willing to shift to a different kind of day for us. Another kind of system is a system for getting out the door, right? Because if you have littles, that is a feat in and of itself, being able to actually make it out of your house. So things like have your kids help you pack a snack bag, making sure everybody has water, making sure everybody has shoes on, those kind of things. In our house, I just have a huge basket, and I have a list of foods that are our go-to foods for outings or away from the house. These are foods that Generally, we don't eat on a regular basis in the house. There's a couple jerkies, packaged seaweed. I will grab fruit. That is usually available all day in the house, but I'll grab a few pieces of fruit to put in a jar of olives. Several of the items are treat-like items that we would not usually eat on a regular basis in the house, like granola bars, but that are fair game when we go on outings. And the kids kind of know what that list is, especially now because mine are teenagers. They will help me pack the snack bag, and then we have a couple large water bottles so we have enough water, and their individual water bottles that also go into that basket. And I just keep that basket by the kitchen underneath the door, and it's accessible when we need it to just grab and go. You can also keep things like jackets or extra clothing for younger kids in that same kind of basket idea or bag idea so that it's just ready to go when you need to go out the door. There are several different systems within homeschooling that can be helpful to keep the consistency and the rhythm of your homeschooling. We used our activity cards that are free in your downloads to basically provide a checklist for my kids. They would help me remember what we had to do for the day, and I would set out the cards that we would be working with, and then my daughter would arrange them in the order that she wanted to do them. And they essentially served as a checklist for us. She is in upcoming, well, she is seventh grade now in school, and so now we're using my planning checklist. We're not using those activity cards, but those activity cards are great to use as a checklist for the kids for homeschooling. They can also be used, which I recently saw someone else use, as a way of planning your day, your rhythm of the day, and you can write how much time it usually takes for each of the subjects, and then lay them out where you can manipulate and move them to decide what you want your daily rhythm to look like. In my history video, I talked about the different systems that I have for preparing for our next history year. Things like snapshotting pictures and placing them into albums to go back and look at later, or saving posts in Instagram and putting them in a folder that I can look at later. Some people do this with physical drawers, and this isn't reserved for history. It can be for literature or for science. They have a particular drawer that they put ideas for the upcoming book or the upcoming science block or whatever it is that they're interested in doing. They have a physical drawer that they print out the activity or the guide or whatever piece of literature is related to the block or whatever's going to be studied, and they put it into the drawer. Another kind of drawer homeschooling system that works is for each child to have a drawer or a magazine holder that holds their books, their curricula, and their activities for the day so they can take that and do their work if they're more independent, or that you can work with through them with the parent and child. But those drawer systems or folder systems can also be really helpful in homeschooling. When I was brainstorming with my friend Jess, she uses this drawer system in her read aloud planning. So when she has a book that she knows is coming up, she will put language cards, because they're doing geography with some of their read alouds recently. So she will put any language cards that they have in that drawer appropriate for that book and that place. Letters from afar might also go in that same drawer. And any activity that she comes across as she is planning or throughout her day, she will just print that off and put it in the appropriate drawer for when that book comes up in their next study. One could also call some of the activities that we do for beginning and ending a year, or beginning a homeschooling day and ending a homeschooling day, as a type of system, because it signals to the child the transition that is coming from one thing to the next. So some of those are like the not back to school parties that happen at the beginning of the year, where people are celebrating not going back to school. It's ironic because that is a signal to the transition of starting homeschooling, but oftentimes it is very much not having to do with homeschooling. Like, I see people kayaking for go back to school parties, or meeting at the park and playing for go back to school parties. But those parties signify the beginning of the homeschooling year. It often is also a celebration for having public spaces back to ourselves, or mostly to ourselves. And we really are spoiled in that way during the academic year when most people are in school. The public places such as the museums and the parks and various other places are less full, and we often have those to ourselves. And that is a perk, I guess, of homeschooling. So it's also, those kind of parties are also celebrations of that kind of thing. But it is a signal to a transition to start the school year. And there are often other signals that we do. A first and last day picture can be in there. Our family personally has a very slow rhythm where we start with one subject and then gently add other things to our schedule until we're at full capacity, so that we're transitioning slowly. That's another kind of system that makes that transition back to school a little easier. Some families also have that same transition for the beginning of their day, especially in the Waldorf community with the younger years. There may be a song or a couple books or a chant or some physical movement that starts the beginning of their circle time or the beginning of their school day in that way. And this is a way for them to transition or signal that their day is about to begin. These are usually relatively short openings, but the same thing can be done at the close of the day, where you're doing small closings that signal the end of the school day and off to do something else, playtime perhaps. Some other systems that Jess mentioned from the lazy genius that can be transferred to homeschooling would be things like bulk planning. And I often do this, though not so much this year, at the beginning of our school year for the upcoming year. I generally have a general idea of the different blocks that we're going to do. I have that part scheduled, but I generally go through and plan in bulk our different history blocks and science blocks that we can do for the year. And that is helpful to me because it frees my time up during the middle of the year when we're actually doing the homeschooling. And it gives me a little bit more time with my family during the year. I only need a few minutes to figure out what's coming up next. And that didn't happen this year, but usually I do quite a bit of bulk planning in the beginning of our year. Another one is to decide once and then be done. So, like, stick with your decision. And of course, you want to have some flexibility here, but we all know it's really easy to get caught up in what everybody else is doing for homeschooling and think, oh, I want to do that too. And I do it as well. In fact, I saw Christie's book journal and I loved it and even bought all of the stickers and the journals for my daughter and I. And then came to realize that neither one of us wanted to keep up extensively with our reading in the way Christy does to make those journals happen. And so I let that go. But it's helpful to understand not everything everybody does is going to work for our family. It's beautiful. It's fine to feel like you want to do all the things, but it's also important to realize that everybody's time and energy is finite and choose the ones that actually work for your family and do those things. So that idea of deciding once, this works for my family, we're going to do this, and moving on can be really helpful. I do want to say, of course, it is nuanced and needs a little bit of flexibility. There always needs to be room for assessment, especially because there are going to be times where your children grow and your needs change. And so a reassessment of what worked and what doesn't work, which is also a great system for end of the year, by the way, is to sit down with your children and talk about what they liked most out of the school year, what they learned about most, what worked well for their education, and what didn't work well or what they didn't enjoy. These kind of conversations can be hugely helpful in planning for the next year. And this sit down with the kids, talking about what worked for them and what didn't work for them, what they would like to study next year, what their interests are really helpful to me and a way for closing out the year for us. It helps me think ahead for planning. I think it also helps them feel invested in our homeschooling and like they have a say, some autonomy in what they're learning. We use it as an end-of-year wrap-up along with our portfolio review and preparation for our annual evaluations that generally happen in the summer between our academic years. We also do a family yearbook. It is not based on the academic year, it's based on the calendar year. But this can also be used as a wrap-up. It's fun to look back and see like what you've done the year before. I have also seen other people transition through end of year with a party or a graduation, and the picture taken with the child's stack of books that they've read is also popular end of the year post. Last day of the year pictures are also really popular. All of these things are a way of signaling the transition and coming into the break or closing up the year, and they are a type of system, even though our other systems probably have a little more support in providing consistency. That is the end of this podcast, and those are some of the systems that I use to keep consistency and order within our homeschooling lives. I hope that some of it was useful. Again, take what you want, leave the rest. I would love for you to share your systems in the comments and what has worked for you, maybe what hasn't worked for you. Sometimes knowing what doesn't work is as useful as knowing what does. So let me know what systems that you use and how they support your homeschooling. All right, until next time, happy homeschooling.